Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Maddie Lee, joined here by Joe Masato at Chesapeake Energy Arena, where the Thunder has just beaten the Orlando Magic 102-94. But I think we're going to start on non-game stuff first.
Yeah, I think it's probably, well, not probably, it's definitely the thing to lead with tonight because there was such a special pregame ceremony for the families of the victims of the 1995 bombing, and you wrote a great story about that. So just sort of take us through the ceremony and what you saw and heard from people.
Yeah, no, it was really moving. And I know, I mean, Chris Paul talked about post-game how it's funny, not funny, it's odd to be in a position where, you know, he remembers very distinctly when the bombing happened. He said he was 10. I haven't done the math to make sure that that's exactly how old he was. But, you know, he was young, but he remembers it happening. He remembers being at school and hearing about it, whereas lots of his teammates weren't even born yet.
Yeah.
Like in
several of them.
In 95, I was 2 years old, so I don't remember it.
Same here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like one of those things where for the guys here, a lot of them, you know, are 21 or 19 and weren't alive when the bombing happened, but the Thunder brings them through. We've written about this before, but they bring them through the memorial before they join the team. And so, and it's this thing that they started in the first year that they were here, and they just, you know, it's one of those things where they want them to have a connection to the place that they're playing for, and that's been their go-to for doing that. And all of the guys talk about how moving it is. We talked to Stephen post-game about it. Stephen and Chris Paul, and Stephen was saying that his biggest takeaway is, like, at first you're really angry, but then when you go through the memorial and the museum, and obviously, you know, you had 168 people die for this act of terrorism, but then he said you end up coming away with this real feeling of, wow, Oklahoma City really came together and came together stronger. And I think in a lot of ways, at least from what I've learned from talking to Oklahomans and getting to go through the memorial and the museum myself, like it feels like that coming together moment defines a lot of what the city's about.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the best things the Thunder does. I mean, they're just so good at tapping into that and tapping into the pulse of the city and realizing that that's such a huge part. I mean, you know, it's 1995, but whichever new players they bring in, they go through that experience and they have to know the history of that. And, you know, I like you, was 2 years old when it happened, but I was born and raised in Oklahoma City, so I felt like it was always sort of a part of me, just talking to family and friends who are close to it. And it's like, you have that sense of understanding, but so many Thunder players obviously aren't from here.
So at first you see these people filing onto the court, and there's, you know, announcement. They have the video boards going, and they launch into a video tribute, essentially, to the 168 lives lost, and they explain the campaign that the memorial launch that's leading up to the 25th year anniversary that's coming up in April. And it was nice little video tribute. And then the real moving stuff, at least as a viewer for me, was when they stopped the video and acknowledged the people on the court. And they're all family members of the people who died in the bombing. And there was one representative for each, and they all had jerseys. They all had city jerseys with, you know, all of the little details that the Thunder jerseys, this year's City Edition jerseys have that are connected to the memorial and to honoring people affected by the bombing, and all of the jerseys are personalized, and so they have the names of the people who died in the bombing on them. And so, you know, the whole arena stood up and gave them a round of applause, and they held up the jerseys with their names, the names of the victims displayed, and it was a really nice moment. And then they went right from that into the invocation and the national anthem, and those were connected too to honoring the people who died in the bombing. And so the invocation was done by Ronnie Fields, who was a senior pastor of First Christian Church in Guthrie, and he was one of those people in that whole mass that who had a family member die. And so that was his mom, Carol June Fields, who was an employee at the DEA. And he said this really relevant prayer that he ended with: "We pray for peace around the world so that none of us has to endure the effects of war and senseless acts of violence." And obviously that latter half is very, very tied to the terrorist attack on the federal building. And then from there went into the national anthem, which was sung by Ernestine Dillard, who just days after the bombing sang "God Bless America" at this prayer service that was at the Oklahoma State Fairgrounds but was internationally televised. And so it was this really beautiful and haunting full circle moment.
Yeah, I mean, everything, it was just so well done. Not a detail was missed, and everything was sort of connected to that day. I mean, the names on the jerseys, the number 95, who they chose for the prayer and the national anthem. And then you have, you know, the pictures of the victims on the, you know, ribbon video board.
Yeah, that was intense, because you saw, I mean, if you've ever been to the memorial and museum, you've seen that room that has all of the pictures of the people who died, and that's really, really emotional. But then they were all, you know, they're, because the ribbon board is right under the 300 level, right. So they're just looking down on these thousands of people and on their loved ones, and so that was a really, really nice touch.
Yeah, I mean, everything just fit together so well. And then it was cool just to be in that crowd today and be able to stand up and clap and cheer for those families, and to just see their sense of like togetherness and unity, like them all walking in together. And they had to stand so closely on the court together because, I mean, it just shows you how terrible that day was. I mean, there was just so many people who were representing them on the court. But, you know, they were all sort of arm in arm with each other, and then at the end just holding up their jerseys. So,
yeah, I mean, you see it at the memorial with the chairs, and that is such, the empty chairs is such an amazing and heartbreaking visual of the horror that took place that day. But then to see it in real people too had a similar but also, you know, equally chilling effect.
Yeah. And what was also cool about this is this was basically, you know, when the players from both teams would line up for, you know, the pregame prayer and stuff. So they were, the Magic and the Thunder were both out there for all of this. And I think it was probably pretty cool for them to see that and be a part of that as well. So just like I said, not a detail was missed. Everything was just handled so well by the organization and by the city to put this on and to honor these families in these ways. And, you know, they were able to come away with keepsakes and just the, you know, I can't wait to look at some of the photos from tonight and to see all of it. It's just going to be really cool.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of personal stories that I wish we could dive into all of them, but
Read Maddie's story, though. It's really, really good. I mean, I think she really captured the mood of tonight and talked to some of the people who were involved. So please read that before you read any game coverage, because it was really the most important part of tonight.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. And the Thunder will wear those city jerseys honoring those affected by the bombing several times at home this season. And so, you know, it's up in the, at least last I checked, it was still up in the museum on that first floor when you first walk in. So you'll get to see them on the court. Check out the Memorial Museum if you have not. And if you have, I cry. I've gone twice with my family and I've cried every time. It's like, really, really moving. And they've done an incredible job of, I mean, we just talked about how they brought it into the ceremony, but also bringing it into those uniforms and the little details all over it. So, and they've worked so closely in partnership. That's why I think why they've been so effective at honoring these people and, you know, remembering this tragedy is that they've worked really closely with both the board at the museum and with the Conscience Committee, which is made up of victims and victims' families. And so they're getting a ton of input for people who were there that day.
Yeah, I mean, it's terrible, you know, the events that caused, forced this to happen, but it's, you know, also very heartwarming to see how, you know, that event is still connected not only with the city but the organization, and they've all sort of embraced that from all sides. And I think you saw the culmination of that tonight. And for those families in attendance, I saw a few of them kind of throughout the stands, some of them holding the jerseys or wearing the jerseys, and they got to see a Thunder win, which I bet was pretty cool for them as well.
Yeah, let's talk some basketball.
Let's do it.
So, Thunder are now 3-4.
3-4. Not
just
bad.
Just a win away from 50%.
Yeah.
Little 500 action. Yeah, I mean, considering they've yet again held a team to under 100 points, which granted, the Magic has been doing that themselves all season.
Yeah, Magic have yet to score in the triple digits, and they had 94 tonight, 102-94. And the real reason, I mean, the Thunder's defense was good. Also, the Magic could not shoot. They were 3 of 22 from 3 compared to the Thunder, who are 12 of 33 from 3. So 12 threes to 3 threes, that will do it in a close game, and that's what put the Thunder over the top.
We saw, yeah, and this was the second game in a row where, I mean, early in the season, we saw them get close and then just kind of putter out in the second half, whether it was like for a stretch in the third quarter or down the stretch, so to speak. And the last two games, that's not been the case, and they have closed strong. Tonight they closed with their three point guards on the floor again.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I mean, we do keep calling it three point guard lineup, and I mean, I keep saying that, but Shea's
been playing a lot off ball.
Yeah, Shea's been mostly playing off ball, but I think he's still maybe long term a point guard, depending on how long Chris Paul and Dennis Schroeder stick around. But yeah, I thought that was interesting, that closing lineup, where basically instead of having, you know, Terrence Ferguson out there, they have Dennis Schroeder, who's usually one of the first guys off the bench. So that lineup's super effective. And Danilo Gallinari's playing the four. And then Steven Adams, who returned tonight very successfully, was playing the five.
Yeah, if you forgot, Steven had that left knee contusion, and so he was out for the last two games and the last like 6.5 minutes or so of the game before that. He doesn't like talking about injuries. He just like brushes it off every time that we ask him about it. So when we asked him when he suffered that left knee contusion originally, he said he didn't remember. So we cannot tell you when he actually suffered it, but he started the season off pretty poorly. He had such a great preseason, and then the first four games of the regular season just did not look like himself.
Yeah, I mean, something was off. He did not have any sort of lift. He wasn't moving around all that well. It looked like he was dealing with an injury to begin the season, which I think is why we sort of want to know the timeline of when he hurt his knee, because it seems like it might not have been the game when he had to go out. But
or maybe he was just sucking.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe it was just early season, not playing well. I mean, he was getting blocked around the rim. He wasn't, you know, everyone remembers the Thomas Bryant game. We won't let you guys forget. But
good old TV.
TV. Our old pal. But tonight, Steven Adams, 5 of 7, 11 points, which was his first double-digit scoring game of the season, which is kind of hard to believe. But 11 points, 11 rebounds, you know, was very efficient. But more than anything, he facilitated the offense so well. He was right in between the free throw line and the top of the key. Guys, you know, using him as a screener, using him to get handoffs on dribble drives. He was rolling to the basket, had a really good two-man game with Hamidou Diallo, Danilo Gallinari. I mean, it seemed like almost every possession down the stretch, Steven Adams was at the center of it.
Yeah. Whether or not he was injured to start the regular season, the rest seemed to have done him well.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, he looked like a different player. I mean, he looked like the Steven Adams of old tonight and not the Steven Adams of the first four games that he played in.
With the added responsibility of really facilitating and having the offense run through him, which the Thunder is doing so much more of now that they have that ball movement focus, because obviously when you have Russell Westbrook, that's not how you want to play. You want to play through Russ. You want him to be getting out in transition. And so now that they've shifted their focus, Steven Adams' role has changed a bit, and it looked really good tonight.
Yeah, it looked good, and I think, you know, we've talked about at different times Billy seems to want them to push the pace, but I think they're pretty good in the half court down the stretch when they've got those three guards who can all handle it, and I think that gives them a lot of comfort. And then they've got Steven Adams, who, as Terrence Ferguson said tonight, he said a surprisingly good passer, and then he corrected himself and he was like, it's not surprising, he's just a good passer. But he facilitates really well, and I think when you have those smaller guards sort of working around him, like, there's just something. Obviously Steven Adams is big, but there's bigger guys even than him in the NBA, but he just seems to take up so much space and create such good offense, and guys were finishing well around the rim. And I think you might be able to see, you know, sort of a new wrinkle to this offense if he's facilitating that far away from the basket.
Yeah, there's that one play where he started with the ball at the top of the key, and I think Shea was calling for it, but Steven ended up turning and going somewhere else. And he had, I'm not 100% sure what order, but a handoff and a fake handoff, and ended up cutting to the rim and getting the pass, I think, from Shea, one of the guards, and had a dunk. And it was just like the perfect example of how they're using him in that offense and how that ball movement then can lead to easy buckets. And the Thunder, I mean, we talked about how the Magic is so big. So even they shoot like, they shoot from all five positions, so and are not shooting very well as a team. But you'd expect when you have such a big team, you've got to win it with the points in the paint. And it was pretty even. The Magic had 44, and the Thunder had 42.
Thunder was a little more efficient, though.
They shot way more efficient in that first half.
Yeah.
The numbers were a bigger
discrepancy in the first half. But overall, Thunder shot 50% in the paint, Magic just below that. And, I mean, across the board, the Magic just did not shoot well. They did a great job on Aaron Gordon. He was 6 of 13. Vucevic was 4 of 15. Evan Fournier was 0 of 7. I mean, they just...
That's huge.
They just locked down their primary offensive options.
Yeah, so another great defensive game. And the offense doesn't come with that much of a cap. I mean, granted, I have to look back at exactly who the Magic has played, but they have a really good defensive rating. So it's not like the Thunder was going up against these defensive scrubs. And part of that, I wonder how much of that is that they're just one of the biggest teams in the league. So you have to figure out how to deal with that when so many other teams are going all in on the positionless thing.
Yeah, you know, not everything was clean from the Thunder's offense, but we talked about that a lot, how the Magic, they're one of the best defensive teams. And, you know, I think the Thunder attacked them pretty well. And a guy that, you know, it's easy to not even mention him at this point because he's been good almost every single game is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He was 9 of 14 tonight, 3 of 5 from 3, led the team with 24 points. And I think, you know, of all the stuff that we wrote after the game, didn't focus on Shai all that much. His name
appeared once in the journal.
I mentioned it once, but that was pretty much it.
If he doesn't set another career high, I'm just not interested.
Forget about him. I mean, he's just really crafty around the rim. We've talked about that a ton, but he's fun to watch. And I want to highlight Darius Bazley real quick. He was 4 of 11 from the field, 2 of 5 from 3, did not shoot the ball well, but I think he played like 14 minutes the other night. He played 24 tonight. Yeah. I think they're trusting him more and more, and he's looking like a guy that's not just a part of their future, but a guy who can really contribute this season. He just handles it well. He shoots it well. I think he makes the right decisions. And I think he could turn into like an elite defender one day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's got that length and athleticism. And I've said this before and I'll say it again. He has a very large skill set for his size. Like, he is such a good ball handler, and he's how tall is he? He's a forward. He's
6
towers
eight,
above
maybe.
These guards. He's I'm assuming will put on weight as he gets older.
Yeah, definitely.
Because he's a little thin now.
Yeah, 6'8".
Yeah,
so I mean he looks like a 19-year-old. I mean he's just not fully developed his body. He's gonna get bigger. Stronger.
He might even get taller. I mean, at 19.
That's scary for the rest of the league if he gets taller. But, and also, this is a guy who, you've chronicled it very well, did not play college basketball. So I think it's even more impressive how quick he's picking things up in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back and just look at Summer League, and it wasn't the best circumstances for him, right? He comes in, he immediately has to play, he doesn't know these guys. And it was like, oh, they got a guy who someday could do something. Like, you could see that he had those ball handling skills. You could see that he had passing ability. But all around, it was like, oh, he's kind of taking bad shots. And he looks a little lost on the court. Which, like, yeah, you come in and have to immediately start playing with a new group and a new system. Like, yeah, you're going to look a little lost. And just, like, his confidence, even in just the last two games, has greatly improved. He looks way more comfortable out there.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Paul, we talked to him the other day, and he said that he was kind of surprised. I think it was after that Pelicans game. Bazley had missed a couple threes, and Chris Paul did not think, he found him on another chance, did not think Bazley would shoot it, and he went right up and made it. And today, like I said, two of five from three, not terrible, but like he's getting his shots up. Like, he does not at all seem bothered by the situation, or hey, I've missed a couple, I'm not going to shoot anymore.
Which is what Chris Paul has been telling him over and over again.
Yeah, for sure. And like, sometimes I feel like you're a little afraid of that. Like, maybe rookies might lean too heavily into getting shots up, but he seems to strike the right balance already. And if you're Sam Presti, I think you're, it's still early, but I think you're very encouraged by what he's done.
Yeah, well, I mean, talking to his people who knew him in high school, so much of what they propped him up for was his passing ability in high school. So I think when you're coming from, I mean, granted, he scored plenty too, but when you're coming from a place in high school where you're focused on that, Terrence Ferguson said it the other night when I was, or no, 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 sorry. Shai said it the other night when I was asking him about how there was one play where Bazley, like, basically looked out to him to try to get rid of the ball, and he just pointed towards the rim. He was in the post, and he just pointed towards the rim, and he went up and got in. And Shai was like, "Well, you know, sometimes he's a little passive. He he doesn't realize that he can get to the rim or get fouled. And so just tried to help him out a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be fun to just to follow him this season and see how he works through those things.
He's going to have some rough nights.
Yeah, and I don't think it's guaranteed, and we've talked about this a lot. I don't know if it's guaranteed that he's going to keep shooting up at this level. There could be some leveling off. There could even be some regression as guys start to have more tape on him and coaches start scheming him a little bit better. Because now, you know, if it's still so early and there's not much on him, you know, if you're an opposing coach, you might want to give the Thunder that shot. You know, Darius Bazley shooting, don't run out and try to defend him. I think people are going to start doing that now. It'll be interesting to see how he responds. But after Dennis Schroeder, he was the second most played guy off the bench tonight for the Thunder.
I wonder, this is looking way too far ahead, but I'm going to say it anyways.
Uh-oh.
We saw both Terrence and Hamidou Diallo have huge leaps from their rookie year to their second year defensively. And Darius Bazley is already... he's already got a pretty good foundation. I wonder if they'll see a similar thing from him and have him just be like immediately elite in that year two.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's got that potential for sure. I mean,
immediately elite may be overstating it a bit, but
no, I mean, but if you're looking at guys through this rebuild or whatever the heck you want to label it, like, if
I keep saying like path to the rebuild.
Path to the rebuild.
Because it's a lot less of a mouthful.
It could be like a short-term rebuild. I mean, they're not...
I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, I mean, it probably is. But the guys who they're definitely... I don't want to say definitely. Probably keeping Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
The guys who are on the same timeline.
Yeah, like SGA, Terrence Ferguson, Hamidou Diallo, Darius Bazley. All of those guys could be above average defensively.
So swinging it back to Steven Adams, those guys that you just mentioned were all on the floor at one time with Steven Adams. Does that
yeah,
add up?
I mean, it was Adams and like everyone was like
21 and under.
Yeah.
It was like Adams, three 21-year-olds, and Bazley. And that was when Steven Adams, I thought, looked the best, where he was just facilitating the heck out of the ball.
And then it'll be interesting to
out of the ball. Yeah, I got lost. The heck threw me off. you got me.
I mean, I think it remains to be seen, you know, still like what even what Steven Adams' future.
Good old Steno.
That's actually his brother. No.
It's like a Chris Paul.
I was going to keep going, and then you just called me out. But I deserved it because I said Steedham. Steven.
Like it's a Chris Paul twin State Farm thing.
Yeah, Cliff.
Good old Cliff.
Like, it remains to be seen if Steven Adams is on that same timeline because he is a little bit older. But I think that was an interesting scene to point out because that could have been like a look at the future with Steven and all those young guys because they sort of fit positionally with Shai at point, Terrence and Hamidou Diallo on the wings, and then Darius Bazley being that four potentially.
I think we're getting close to the point where we're going to wrap up, but I want to bring up one more thing, which is my favorite play of the night.
Please tell us about it.
Danilo Gallinari lost his shoe. So it was late in the game, and he lost his shoe trying to get back on defense. And one of his teammates picked it up for him and handed it back to him. And he tried, like, as he was shuffling back to quickly slide it on, and it didn't work. And so he just started playing defense with his shoe in his hand. And then he went up to try to get a rebound, and he had the best quote of the night where he was talking about how he was like, he said that he knew he had the advantage because even though Vucevic is taller than him normally, he knew with his shoe he was a little bit taller. So he went up and tipped the ball with it.
I'm upset that you didn't try to give us your best Danilo Gallinari impression.
Oh, yeah. No.
try the accent.
I am my mother's daughter, and accents are not good.
But he's really funny to I wasn't in the locker room for that, but I watched the video that Matty had, and it's really funny to just hear him explain that situation, because, like, he's a very, like, low-key, understated guy, and I don't think he ever tries to be funny, but that was pretty funny.
It was so funny. Yeah, he said it all, like, I mean, he cracked a smile, but it was all pretty, like, monotone, essentially, where he's like, yeah, so I knew that he had the advantage. So good. And then, I mean, the interesting thing, the less funny thing that came out of it was Chris Paul was asked about that same play, and he was talking about how much it showed that this team has good basketball IQ, because normally your teammate loses a shoe, you foul to stop play, let them get their shoe on. But in that situation, they're already in the bonus. So if they'd fouled, Orlando would have gone to the line, and it's a close game. They did not want to send them to the line when they didn't have to. And so he was talking about how, I mean, especially with a young team. I mean, granted, the guys on the floor at that point were, it was a much more veteran lineup than usual, but for a team that's new together, that's, you know, figuring things out, it was good. It was a good moment.
Yeah, they all really, really seem to like Gallinari and like playing with him. And I mean, it's easy to see why. He's a very, very good basketball player. It's interesting hearing those guys talk about him and how he's sort of competing, because he's not traditionally been known as like a solid defensive player, but I think he's trying here.
Yeah.
And another note on him before we go. He had three fouls in the second quarter and then did not pick another one up. So I thought he was going to be subbed out. Billy left him in, and he continued to hang in there defensively against some really physical frontline guys from the Magic.
Yeah, not the Thunder's best defender, but not a pushover.
No, I mean, he holds his own. I mean, we all know why he's in there, and that's right. Offensively, but he's not a total negative out there, I don't think, defensively.
No, he can't move. Like, it's not that he's not trying. He just can't move his feet that fast.
No. He's very upright.
Yes, he is. And a fantastic shooter.
Yeah.
And just, like, so composed at all times. He never looks rushed.
No.
I cannot think of a moment when I've been like, oh, he rushed that shot.
Yeah. He never even looks like he's sprinting, really. I mean, everything is just fluid with him. Like, it never looks like he's, like he's trying to rush or like get a shot off. Like, it always comes pretty natural.
He's the king of pump fakes, so he's just like standing there very coolly putting up a pump fake, and the defender's flying past, and then he just coolly puts up the shot. Yeah. Okay.
And as we've seen the last couple times we've been to practice, he is the king of their post-practice shooting competitions. Yeah. Like, he can't be beat, folks. It's like him and Muscala and Schroeder and sometimes Nader, and he
cleans up.
He cleans up. He, like, walks off the floor before it's even over because he knows he won.
Well, that's as good a place as any to stop. Thank you for tuning in to the Thunder Buddies podcast. We will be back with you on Thursday.
I think that's right.
Yes, on Thursday.
Late Thursday.
We are. It's barely. We're barely gotten into the regular season. I've already forgotten the days of the week. Thursday, when the Thunder goes to San Antonio, I will be there, and I will call Joe from there.
Yes.
And we'll.
You will hear my phone voice.
Great voice. Great voice.
Steedman. I'll clean that up.
Thanks for tuning in. Like it, love it, share it with your friends, your enemies, the Steedmans in your life.
Steedmans, all of them.
Your pets.
And your the Stevens.
Grandparents. Stevens and Steedmans of all spellings.
That's right.
Even
Stephens.
Yeah. Just tell people about it. Tell people to listen.
Yeah. And get them to subscribe too.
Yes. Very important. Subscribe.
And we will see you on Thursday.